Counsel, good morning to you. Mr. Wentz, are you here with us today?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
And is it Ms. Cottrell?
Yes.
Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Wentz, then you may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Ken Wentz appearing on behalf of the defendant and appellant, West Corporation. In early 2018, Mr. Marr, the plaintiff in this case, applied for and accepted the job of his dreams, a chief technology officer position with First National Technology Solutions. The day, less than a day actually, after he accepted that job, he submitted his resignation to West Corporation via email. In the email, he made no mention that he had applied for or accepted the job with First National. And in the email and further correspondence, he made no mention of it with any of his supervisors or anybody else at West. The reason is because he had an employment agreement with West Corporation. And while the employment agreement maintained that he continued to be an employee at will, it set forth the rights and obligations of the parties should Mr. Marr's employment end under certain circumstances. Those certain circumstances contemplated if he searched for and obtained another job, and that would be paragraph 3B of the agreement, where he could resign for a, quote, reason other than good reason. In that situation, he would receive roughly $32,000 in severance. Under 3C of the agreement, he could resign for a, quote, good reason, as that term is defined in the employment agreement, and he would receive roughly $400,000. So there's a really good reason that he didn't tell anybody that he was resigning because he'd taken another job.
Were all these facts in front of the jury?
They were in front of the jury, Your Honor.
And what is the consequence of that?
The consequence of that is some of the facts, let me back up, were in front of the jury. Because regarding this First National issue, which is a major issue and one of the key issues in the case, the court actually excluded a number of documents and testimony regarding that issue. Mr. Marr knew that this was key evidence in the case, as is evidenced by the fact that he tried to exclude all of it through a motion in limine before the trial began. The court decided to take that evidence piecemeal, and because of that, Mr. Marr actually, in his opening statement and then on direct examination, introduced a lot of testimony on the First National issue. But then when on cross-examination, West started to get into the First National issue, while some testimony was allowed, a number of documents were excluded from evidence based upon relevance and hearsay. Relevance, it's the First National evidence that was excluded included his application for employment, included his correspondence with First National, and included his acceptance of that employment. Those are all statements that he made that were excluded from evidence by the court. Additionally, they were excluded not only on relevance ground, which we submit was error, but they were also excluded on hearsay ground. And the hearsay ground here is really interesting, and this court can review this de novo because a district court's finding of hearsay is a de novo review before this court. And what's interesting about the hearsay issue here is that the objection that was made to these documents by Mr. Marr at trial was relevance only for four of five documents. The district court sua sponte injected hearsay into the mix. And on four of the five documents that it excluded based upon hearsay as part of the hearsay relevance cocktail, the court said that the reason that it was excluding them based upon hearsay was because the First National documents did not contain statements against Mr. Marr's interest. And that therein is also the prejudice, because it's not just the exclusion of the First National documents that was prejudicial, but it was the statements made sua sponte by the court. Now, the court also applied an erroneous standard, because the standard in Nebraska for hearsay and excluding items from hearsay is all it needs to be is a party's own statement offered against that party. Here, that's not the standard the court applied. The court said verbatim in the record on pages 196 through 198 of the transcript that it was basing it on the fact that the court, the judge in the case, held that these were not statements made against Mr. Marr's interests. And so, which poisoned the entire First National line of questions, any evidence that had been previously admitted regarding First National, that job, and it goes directly to whether paragraph 3B or 3C apply.
Did the jury hear evidence that Mr. Marr had applied for a job at First National for the events that he claims were good reasons?
Yes, the jury did hear testimony.
Did the jury hear that he accepted the job at First National the day before he gave his notice that he was resigning?
Yes.
What information that was excluded was important for the jury to hear that didn't hear regarding your argument that this wasn't for good?
Right. Two main points. First is the statements that were made in his application for employment. One of those statements being that he was ready and available to come work at First National within 2 weeks after he submitted his application. And then secondarily, a number of the correspondence that he had with First National regarding his onboarding process, regarding his drug screen, because 3C under good reason basically kicks off a chain of events. He provides a good reason, which then gives West the opportunity to cure. That was all essentially illusory by Mr. Marr because he'd already accepted that job. And then the correspondence that was excluded by the court and that the jury was not able to hear evidence or testimony regarding was Mr. Marr's continued statements to First National that he was going to be starting on June 25th and that he never told them that he intended to remain at West should West cure. And so any effort that West wanted to or tried to make to cure was essentially it subverted the process. And additionally, it also goes to pretext as well, because even though Mr. Marr was claiming that he was resigning for good reason, the fact of the matter is that the facts showed otherwise. He was given four different opportunities in the 6 months prior to the date of his resignation to either resign for good reason or be on a reduction in force list.
Does Mr. Marr's subjective intent matter at all to the good reason analysis? I'm looking particularly at the employment agreement. It says, for purposes of this agreement, executive shall have good reason to terminate if these events occur. I don't read that to require us to get inside Mr. Marr's head and figure out, well, what really was your motivation? I read that to say, if you have these events met, he has good reason. Can you respond?
Sure. So two points to that, Your Honor. The first is that it does matter because it in the Phipps versus Skyview Farms case, which we cite in our brief, the defendant in that case claimed that there were breaches that occurred before that they relied on. And that's what Mr. Marr is essentially claiming here, is that there were breaches that occurred before May 21 that he was relying on to clarify what good reason is. And then secondarily, if the court also looks at 3B, which is the reason other than good reason, these are mutually exclusive. So it can either be one or the other. Either he resigns for a reason other than good reason, or he resigns for good reason, which triggers the test that Your Honor spoke to. But with regard to the reason other than good reason, that's where the intent comes in. And each one of those are separate independent clauses. The prefatory language of that clause says one of the following. And so it makes them mutually exclusive. So either he resigns for a reason other than good reason, which intent is very necessary to make that determination, as well as the factors to show that he was in it for the $400,000 payday. And the additional evidence of that was that when it became apparent that West was not interested in exploring this good reason or did not agree with him that good reason existed, then he pivoted and went to an executive in the HR department and asked to be on a reduction in force list, because he wanted that $400,000. And I would like to reserve the small remaining time I have for rebuttal, unless the court has any questions. Thank you.
You may. Thank you. Ms. Cottrell, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Rihanna Cottrell, and I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Ken Marr. We ask the district court to uphold the jury verdict. We ask this court, I apologize, to affirm the district court's rulings and uphold the jury verdict entered in this matter. A majority of the appellant's argument focuses on this idea of pretext and that Mr. Marr's state of mind somehow impacts his rights under the alternative employment agreement and the restricted stock award agreement. However, under the terms of those agreements, Mr. Marr's state of mind is not relevant. Those agreements allow Mr. Marr to resign for good reason if there is a material adverse reduction in his duties and responsibilities and his reporting responsibilities. There is no consideration or contemplation of whether he had applied for a position outside of West Corporation or if he had accepted a position. These agreements were presented to Mr. Marr by West Corporation, drafted by West Corporation as non-negotiable agreements that he could sign. If West had intended for his state of mind or his application for employment outside of the company to impact the good reason analysis, it could have included that in the agreements. However, it did not do so. The evidence presented at trial established that good reason did exist. Evidence was submitted that showed a material adverse reduction in Mr. Marr's responsibilities and duties. There was also significant evidence submitted that showed a reduction in his reporting responsibilities. Thus, he could establish good reason under both of the agreements and did so. Importantly,
could facts be construed as they were attempting to fire him?
I think they could be. I think that the reductions in his duties and responsibilities and also his reporting responsibilities were very significant. And there was evidence presented that after he was moved from integrations to divestitures, when Mr. Carlson became his supervisor, that there really wasn't any work for him to do. He was deprived of a meaningful role in the organization. And I think given his tenure at the organization and his track record, it could be construed that that was effectively removing him from performing any meaningful duties.
Is the reduction in duties, reporting responsibilities that you're relying on, does all of that, in your view, come after Mr. Carlson becomes his supervisor?
Yes. I think that there were instances prior when Mr. Marr acknowledged that he felt that his position had been changed and that his reporting responsibilities had been changed to an extent to allow him to exercise the good reason to voluntarily resign. However, I believe in those instances, Mr. Marr testified that other executives within the company had come to him, encouraged him to stay, spoken with him about the changes that would be taking place in his duties and responsibilities, assured him that he would still be serving a meaningful role.
And what do we have in the record after Mr. Carlson becomes his supervisor that shows a reduction in responsibilities or an adverse change?
Certainly. After Mr. Carlson became Mr. Marr's supervisor, his reporting responsibilities were reduced because Mr. Marr was a senior vice president. Prior to Mr. Carlson becoming his supervisor, Mr. Marr had reported to an individual named Pamela Mortensen, who was an executive vice president. Mr. Carlson was brought in and was given the title of a vice president. Essentially, Mr. Marr, as a senior vice president reporting to a vice president, was required to report to a subordinate employee. There was testimony presented at trial from individuals affiliated with West Corporation, as well as Mr. Marr, that they were unaware of any other instances within the company where a level of a senior vice president was required to report to a vice president. Additionally, Mr. Marr testified that he discussed this with Mr. Carlson at the time he gave notice of his voluntary resignation, that he was moved from reporting through the operations division to the finance division. As an individual without a financial background who had for 26 and a half years reported through the operations side of the company, he believed that was a reduction in reporting responsibilities. He was also required to report to individuals outside of the Omaha area when he had previously reported to individuals who were based locally and further believed that to adversely impact his reporting responsibilities. In terms of the duties and responsibilities, when Mr. Marr was reporting to Ms. Mortensen, he was tasked with integrations. So as part of that, he worked with many divisions across the company in order to bring companies that West had purchased in. As part of that, he was looking at employment decisions. He was looking at technology. He was looking at how to really bring those entities in and function well within the company. After Mr. Carlson moved him from working on integrations to working on divestitures, all of that strategic analysis was really taken away. As Mr. Marr testified, he went and spoke with individuals on the divestiture side once he learned that his duties would be changed, and there wasn't really anything for him to do. Additionally, divestitures does not require that same level of work of strategy and analysis because you're removing the entity, you're getting rid of it. You don't have to worry about integrating it, bringing it into the company, bringing those employees in and making it successful.
So the fact that he begins looking for another job before Mr. Carlson takes over his reporting duties has no impact on the good reason?
I don't believe so. I don't believe that the agreement contemplates that when assessing whether or not there is good reason.
So he's just merely fortuitous, lucky that Carlson becomes his reporting person at that point, because he's already looked for a job, applied for a job, nearly accepted the job, and just happens to be lucky that Carlson comes in and creates that good reason?
Well, I think the record will show that Mr. Marr felt that he needed to look for this new position because he was in a situation where there were a large number of reductions in force taking place in the company. And he didn't just find this position on his own. A member of West's executive team, I believe he was an executive vice president at the time, came to Mr. Marr and said, I've learned of this position. I think it might be a good opportunity for you. Mr. Marr, aware of the fact that reductions in force were taking place and wanting to make sure he was in a position that he could continue to provide for his family, applied for that position. Now, the testimony will also show that Mr. Marr had invested 26 and a half years of his career at West and never wanted to leave the organization. Even after he submitted his notice of good reason to voluntarily resign under the agreements, Mr. Marr was hoping that West would cure and spoke with Mr. Riley, the deputy.
Had he already accepted the position when he gives the notice to cure or the hope to cure?
Yes.
Is that just, I'm going to take this position, but if you cure it, I'll give up that position?
Precisely. That is what Mr. Marr testified at trial, that he intended to stay with West Corporation if they could cure, and that was his ultimate goal. In my mind, I look at the First National position as a backup plan, as Mr. Marr's worst case scenario. But again, I don't believe that that position is relevant to the analysis of good reason under the employment agreements.
Assume we disagree or reading that pretext or his subjective motivation doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
What's your response then on the evidentiary materials related to the First National inquiry that the district court kept out?
So assuming that you disagree and that these may be relevant to the analysis, I do still believe that they were properly excluded under hearsay. The documents that were excluded as hearsay were either email communications from representatives of First National who was not a party of the case, these individuals were not deposed or called to testify to Mr. Marr, or communications between those individuals and Mr. Marr. Further, I don't believe that the exclusion of those, that limited number of exhibits results in prejudicial error. The evidence was before the jury that Mr. Marr had applied for, interviewed, negotiated, accepted the position, and engaged in the pre-employment activities of completing a drug test, verifying employment, and also reserving a parking space. All of that evidence was before the jury. They were able to analyze and assess that and weigh it and held that it did not impact the good reason analysis under the agreements.
Your opponent seems to think that the statement in the job application that he was available to start in 2 weeks and that that date would have been before Carlson becoming his supervisor was something that would have been particularly helpful for the jury to hear. How does that fit into your lack of prejudicial error?
Well, I don't believe it's relevant. I don't believe it's of consequences to whether or not there was good reason for him to resign. I also believe that the situation with Mr. Carlson becoming his supervisor and taking those actions is what gives rise to the good reason. And so the statements made in that job application, I just don't believe are relevant to that analysis.
Factually, on the agreements drafted by West, were they drafted by the original owners, or were they drafted by the people who bought West Corporation?
They were drafted prior to the change in control, which took place in 2017. However, the representations made to Mr. Marr and the reading of the agreements is that they still continue. At no point in time were the agreements revoked, or was Mr. Marr informed that because there had been a change in control, that those agreements would not be controlling. Further, when Mr. Marr gave his notice of good reason to voluntarily resign, that argument was never made by West Corporation. They treated those agreements as controlling when analyzing how to proceed. I see that I am out of time. If there are no further questions, I would just ask that the decision of the district court be affirmed and the jury verdict be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
34 seconds, Your Honor.
34 seconds, Mr. Wentz.
Thank you, Your Honor. With regard to Mr. Marr's notice, he didn't cite two of the things that that he stated at trial in his notice. At trial, for the first time, he states that one of his reasons for resigning is because he was now reporting to people that were outside of Omaha. That was prejudicial because the theme became an us versus them, Nebraska versus this new private equity group that came in and started controlling West and doing all these layoffs. He never cited that as a reason. And he also reported to the leader of the integrations and divestitures team the entire time, and his hierarchy position in the hierarchy of the organization never changed. Your Honor, with that, we would ask that the court.
Before you conclude.
Yes.
Why didn't West make an attempt to try to cure?
It did. They had discussions with Mr. Marr. They had verbal discussions. They had emails with Mr. Marr that were admitted into evidence to try and get to the bottom of what Mr. Marr's reasons were for resigning. And throughout that same time period, Mr. Marr was talking out of one side of his mouth with West, but then talking out of the other side of his mouth with the president of First National Bank and Mr. Lauritsen with First National Bank, and telling them start date, drug screen, where am I going to park? Please hold off on bringing in a candidate that is going to be working for me until I am onboarded and get to interview him.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we would ask, Your Honor, that the court reverse the court's denial of our motion for judgment, notwithstanding the verdict of motion for new trial. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. That concludes arguments in Marr versus West Corporation. So you're excused.